Welcome to Bombshell. I'm Erin Simpson.
I'm Lauren DeYoung Shulman.
And you are getting a special twofer episode today, by which I mean just the two of us, as Radha manages some challenges on the home front. So I don't want to say that Lauren and I are phoning it in, but we are, and as always, on our distributed setup and a little bit of the struggle bus. We're trying to figure out what's going on in the world and what's going on in our lives as we are in week 612 of quarantine or whatever it is that we're in here. I think it's been like 3 weeks, but it feels like 3 years.
I had to go into the backyard today at like 12:30 and have a really quick glass of wine and get away from my five-year-old for a little while. And that is something I vowed not to do at the beginning of this crisis. Then I was like, you know what? I don't know what else to do right now. This is a bad moment. So yeah, struggle bus, 100% on it. I'm on it, and we're going a million miles an hour.
Yep, we super are. So speaking of, Lauren, what are you drinking?
So I thought I had my really nice rosé in the refrigerator, but I did not. I put my Charles Shaw White Zinfandel in the refrigerator.
Those are not the same thing.
They are not. So tomorrow morning may be a big problem, but it's, you know, it's fine. It's fine for the $3 that it was.
Yeah. I'm drinking gin and fizzy water, and I'm almost out of gin. And so that's a different part of the struggle bus. I don't know if we have to like change lanes or lines or whatever, but I need the struggle bus to make a pit stop at the ABC. So
yep.
That's where we're at. And we are going to mix it up a little bit this week. Instead of doing keeping up foreign relations, although today there was a report that Boris Johnson is in the ICU in the UK, you know, best wishes to him and his family. That's kind of freaking me out a little bit. Instead of doing that or White House mayhem, we're going to follow Lauren's lead because she's amazing at writing these kind of interview questions or framing our conversation in a way that I am not. And Lauren, why don't you start with kind of where we're going to take this discussion?
Yeah. So I think this entire situation has forced a lot of us to spend more time in our heads than we are necessarily comfortable with or used to in any way, and certainly spend more time alone. And that has involved a lot of fun conversations and terrifying conversations and emotional conversations. And I wanted to just kind of confront that head on by asking some pretty direct questions of the two of us of, first of all, starting with what is scaring us. So Erin, do you have there's so many things to be scared of right now. However, can you narrow it down into something podcast worthy? What is scaring you at this moment?
So that ends up to me being very personal. I'll kind of break that down into two things. The first is being sick on my own. And there's been some good resources out there about monitoring symptoms and keeping symptom logs. And I've reached out to some other women in our networks that we have kind of a mutual aid pact amongst folks. And that's actually been pretty gratifying. But maybe like a lot of our listeners, I have some underlying conditions. I have a little bit of asthma, but it was actually made much worse when I was in Afghanistan, and partially from inhaling any number of things that were being burned in the general vicinity. And so I do kind of worry. I am scared about my underlying lung issues and lung health if I were to get sick. The other thing I'm scared about, I don't know if it's scared or just like dread, which I guess is the same thing, is I don't know when I'm going to see my family again.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, like both in terms of like legal restrictions and shelter in place restrictions, but there's some other underlying health issues in the family, like a really good testing regime where you could definitively document that you were not an asymptomatic carrier of the virus. You know, I would have a difficult time going to see my parents or my nieces or my siblings. And so that those two things, I'm sort of scared of being sick alone, but also just really, I have no idea when I'm going to get to see them again. And that is a very strange sort of experience. What about you? What's scaring you?
I guess two things that are scaring me that are related are three things. The first being at a slightly more professional level, but it gets so fast into the personal, is you know, all the misinformation that's out there about how to treat or prevent coronavirus. And misinformation is something that I'm used to thinking about in like a, you know, elections or politics or other kind of sense. But then I realized, like, how often do I need to be quizzing or just like chatting with some of my friends about like, hey, you know that like social distancing is a thing, or the weird stuff that you put in aquariums does not actually prevent coronavirus and things like that, because it's out there pervasively and in very like non-political forums. Mm-hmm. So like, how do I need to be checking in with my grandparents or parents or sisters or others about these in a way that like, I would never frankly get into their business too much on a political level, because it's just not how my family engages. And like, I trust them on a lot of these things. But on other things, like, not seeing them day to day, I don't necessarily know, like, how are they functioning in this crisis? And I know a lot of people have had tough conversations with their families in that way. Mm-hmm. I guess the other thing that I worry about is like, as most of you know, I'm married. I have a 5-year-old. Like, at what point do we just detest each other? Like, because all things considered, we're actually getting along pretty well. Like, everybody's acting out in some forms. But like, if we have to spend the next several months only hanging out with one another, that's got to happen at some point. And I'm so lucky to be in a place where, you know, I really love my husband and I love my son, but can you imagine being in a circumstance where you didn't want to be in a household that you were stuck in, or were scared to be in the household that Absolutely. You were stuck in? And how was that work out for you in this place where you have to stay in place? So that was a total downer. So we have to start with a slightly more positive framing of what is giving you hope at this moment, whether big things, small things, or anything else.
Well, I think that there's definitely some good initial data, you know, to channel my inner Radha here for a second. The data is giving me a little bit of hope. So we're starting to see curves bending in Italy, for example, maybe also in Spain. If you look kind of below the national level in the United States, you know, certain cities or municipalities are starting to look better. So a couple of cities in Northern California, it looks like the really restrictive social movement measures or social distancing measures there have played out pretty well. Seattle numbers are looking good. Or good is very relative, obviously, but we're kind of, you know, they're coming off the steepest exponential increase. And so that does show that there is efficacy to these hardships that we're all experiencing, you know, in terms of staying at home, in terms of not shopping, in terms of potentially having lost your job, that those are doing things in terms of keeping people safe. And, you know, I think that's probably the main thing giving me hope. In a weird way, it's sort of lovely that it's spring. Like, things are green outside. The sun is shining fairly often here in DC, and there is sort of, you know, life returning. And I don't know that it seems, you know, very romantic or, you know, romanticizing, but there is sort of an element of like, it comes again. So that's giving me hope. What about you? Did you hear the Queen's speech? Did you watch any of it?
I haven't. I was saving it for later tonight so that Ross and I could watch it together.
I thought that whoever her speechwriter is did an excellent job with We Will Meet Again. I mean, that's a wonderful callback to an earlier era.
Absolutely. A very sort of clearly World War II mm-hmm. era theme. So I guess a couple of things giving me hope is like, I don't think Aaron is, but maybe I'm wrong. I was a total sucker for all of the Italians on their balconies singing songs and dancing mm-hmm. together. And my neighborhood's not quite there, I live in a row house on the street of row houses, and like a whole bunch of us will all sit on our porches and have quote unquote happy hour together in the evenings, or just kind of hang out and you can kind of yell across in a way that we did not absolutely do at all before this. Like, we, you know, you'd say hello to your neighbors, but there was never any kind of communal, like, let's all hang out together in a more kind of neighborly fashion that you might have seen many years ago. And like, that's like the knowledge that, like, I think increasingly now, if something did happen, if I had to turn to a neighbor for assistance or anything else like that, that would absolutely much more strongly be the case than I would have thought it would be a few months ago, which has been really reassuring. The other thing that is giving me hope for no good reason at all is John Mulaney and John Krasinski. So John Mulaney, I have finally been watching all of his comedy, and my God, he's so fucking hilarious. And then John Krasinski has been doing his regular, like, you know, what good things are going on in the world newscasts. And they're great. The latest one is like laugh out loud funny, and also like you'll cry in the middle, and it's just wonderful. So people are, the way that people are trying to like keep one of their spirits up, like even the television stations are like, here, have all of The Wire, all of it. Just go watch all of The Wire. Like, that's just delightful. I really appreciate
it. Yeah, it is a fascinating, the brand decisions are fascinating. The free content decisions are fascinating. And then, you know, I guess, you know, all of my podcasts, you know, which are mostly NPR podcasts because that's my brand, you know, Pop Culture Happy Hour, It's Been a Minute, have done some really neat episodes on the kinds of things that various folks in pop culture circles, and we'll come back to pop culture, obviously, here at the end, have been doing. But it is, you know, people have said it sort of flippantly, but I believe it very, very strongly, which is, you know, what have people turned to in a time of fear or concern or crisis? And it's the arts. And it's a really good argument for public school music programs and the National Endowment for the Arts and kind of everything in between. So, yes, I would agree that those bits are giving me hope as well.
So I'll answer the next question first, because I apologize, it gets slightly nerdy in this one. But that my next question is what you would worry about if you really had the space to. And the first one is something that caught my eye the other day on Twitter, that apparently Secretary Esper, Secretary of Defense, and Secretary Pompeo at the State Department had come to an agreement on the United States withdrawing from the Open Skies Treaty. And like, that in itself, like, I am not a person who focuses extensively on open skies or other related topics, but it caught my eye because I thought, why are they doing this right now? Like, this is a point where a lot of their workforce, or the abundance of their workforce, is working from home at this moment in time, or is shifting their focus over to pandemic response in some form, and particularly Department of Defense. There's so many things going on there. And it occurred to me that, you know, intelligently, they are thinking of can we politically easily get through this moment that is not going to achieve interagency or congressional pushback in a way that it might have a few months ago.
So cynical.
From a political perspective, like, okay, sure. Like, yeah, lots of administrations do things like that. From a, you know, unfairness perspective, I just think of, what are they forcing their staffs to work on at a point where they should be doing other things? And what should be receiving more kind of democratic oversight and accountability? I mean, little d democratic oversight and accountability at this point in time that we'll see going forward. So it's, that worries me. And then kind of separately, like, my own sort of like, where is all this latent anger that I am probably building up going to go at some point in time? Like, it doesn't feel like it now, but I'm sure it'll erupt at some point.
Right. So yeah, I have a couple of things that, I mean, my ability to worry is really quite profound. So I feel as though I have room to worry about any number of things, and I kind of cycle through, you know, the micro into large macro on a, I don't know, 3-day cycle or something. One thing that I like almost literally have not thought about in a month is, apparently there's an election this year, like a presidential election.
Oh my God, yeah. Not only that, I think President Trump spoke with Vice President Biden on the phone today.
You know, they've pushed the Democratic National Convention, I think, by a month, from July to August or something like that. You know, the big picture thing that I worry about, I guess I would say, is that I think this is actually going to, this crisis situation related to the virus is going to last for quite a while. If you kind of look back at 2018 in the so-called Spanish flu, you know, it has three distinct phases, and one of which is a return phase in the winter of late in 2018, as opposed to the initial spring outbreak. And so I think that we are ripe for some sort of, you know, after some of the social distancing measures and stay-at-home orders have lifted, then, you know, as the cold weather returns in, say, oh, I don't know, November, that there would be a return potentially of the virus, and it could intersect with the election. So that is something that I worry about occasionally. There is kind of an interesting question around multilateral institutions and kind of, you know, are we seeing like a return of really significant nationalism and, you know, border restrictions and, you know, just an exacerbation of the, you know, kind of populist nationalism we've seen over the last 3 or 4 years? Or is this a classic example of a problem that can't be solved unilaterally, and it will lead to a little bit of recharging of some multilateral institutions? I can kind of go back and forth on that. You know, on the one hand, the Olympics have been, I don't know if they've been officially canceled, but they've been indefinitely postponed.
They've been put off for a year.
You know, you see some, you know, the World Health Organization's kind of in between things, you know, NATO's not really in play on this, you know, for example. But I think a lot of the like functional institutions that, you know, that go around like air travel and some other things have had obviously a lot of roles to play. So it's, you know, I think still early days. And there is some encouraging, you know, activity amongst scientists around the world. So as formal barriers to entry have gone up, there's been a lot more collaboration within the scientific community, you know, publicly releasing the genome sequence for COVID-19, for the actual virus itself, and other sort of pieces. So, I mean, I think that the jury's still sort of out there, but I do sort of worry if this is, I mean, like the 1920s was not a decade that needed to be replayed. And there's a few different pieces that we're tracking, you know, toward there, to say nothing of a global economic sort of shock,
right?
Which we're also in the middle of.
It's actually, you know, one of the comments you made reminded me of one other thing that I have been sort of in the back of my mind worried about is like so many of the metrics that we have talked about in terms of a country or even a city's ability to respond to the virus have been very wealthy first world focused. Mm-hmm. You know, how many hospital beds, ventilators, trained physicians with very specific types of specialties, yep, that in New York City is running out of. And I think we have not really even grappled with what happens when this virus takes over a country with less resources, with fewer facilities, with fewer doctors and otherwise. And like, it's a crisis that I think we can't even like grapple with in our minds. Like right now, those metrics in some ways are easier to deal with than the absence of those metrics, which is a, you know, an absolute horror show of a nightmare to come that may come to pass. So on that positive note, what are you grateful for?
That's a great question. I am remiss for the most part in my gratitude practice. I would have to say it is not my strongest suit. I'm really quite grateful for my nieces at the moment. They are, of course, home from school. They're in Missouri. And I end up talking with them at least once a day, usually twice a day. I get a morning update from my youngest niece. I find out who is up already, who is still in bed, what they had for breakfast, what the weather is like, if there's any schoolwork, and what I'm going to do. So there's like a whole, am I in PJs? Is she in PJs? There's a whole sort of rack and stack discussion. She would be just like an excellent sergeant major going, I don't think you shaved yet, you know, sort of. but so I'm grateful for them. We've played bingo across the states and across even, you know, some continents and time zones. That's been a lot of fun. And, you know, I guess I'm honestly grateful, like, to have had the resources. I have a very nice apartment that I am more or less secluded in at this point in time. I have good resources in terms of fast internet and lots of devices. And so even though it's very weird and dislocating to not be able to physically interact with people, I can, you know, talk to them and really even see them in a way that if this had happened 10 years ago, I think it would have been really deeply isolating to a lot of folks. So I'm grateful for those elements of modern technology that are not a hellscape like Twitter. What about you?
So I am first off grateful that I have decided to not care a lot about what is going on in the Navy right now. with Acting Secretary Moldley in his speech on the Teddy Roosevelt and the abrupt firing of Captain Crozier. And like, there's just like so many layers of civil military mess that I decided that it can go on without me. And it really can.
It will
be totally fine. It will go on without me. And all of us, Bombshell, it will exist. Later on, Bombshell will do like a, you know, what might have been episode, and we can talk about this incident because there's so much going on. I'm also grateful for Oreos, which are incentivizing my beloved child to do everything that needs doing, except for brushing his teeth, which is probably a bad incentive problem I have right now.
That,
I have a new dog.
You do? You finally got one?
I have a new dog. I have a new dog named Eliza. She's a beautiful black lab, and we just got so lucky because it was already extremely well trained in being very affectionate and loving at a point where her family very, very much needed her to be. So she's been great. It makes us get outside and, you know, get fresh air and things like that. And then I guess the last thing I'm grateful for, I mean, other than like the obvious family and support networks I have, is that there seems to be a redefinition of what it means to be a true public servant and a true hero to the nation in some ways. And not just the doctors and nurses and other health figures that obviously deserve it, but the real front line of the folks who are checking out our groceries and delivering food and other things like that have to keep on going, that are putting themselves at enormous risk for very low pay. And I am really hopeful that the gratitude for them keeps up, but also that a rethinking of what the reward should be coming out of this will continue to be explored. And, you know, I'm sure we'll be part of the political conversation for a long time, but like there's a reason that we have been talking about whether or not we should be paying people who make minimum wage more. The people who are making minimum wage are the ones who are doing a lot of the work right now that we are too terrified to even go out and encounter ourselves.
It's a great conversation around essential work. It's also a question around that work is also highly local. It can't be outsourced, you know, to other localities. Your grocery store is your grocery store because it is near you. Even if you are ordering things online, the delivery services are delivering to you. And so there's really a sense of place, and the geography of that matters, you know, quite a lot. And medical professionals are in the same boat. I mean, a lot of that can't quite be outsourced or even automated. My sister is a nurse. I have cousins who are nurses and other medical professionals. And it is one of those things that is, I don't think it's really hard to wrap our brains around. I saw something, you probably read it too, in that political article a couple weeks ago where, you know, if we at the next Nationals games, whenever they're held again, if we wave our caps, not just to returning veterans, but to nurses and doctors and respiratory therapists and everyone else, you know, who's, you know, grocery workers and delivery folks in the audience, that would really be something. And, you know, to your earlier point, a very interesting Civ Mill shift as well, with the essential workers here are not, they're in uniforms, but they're not in camouflage uniforms. It's a very different sort of look. So, okay. Well, I think that's been a pretty good overview of,
that was a journey,
emotional journey. Can we dish a little on pop culture? Can you tell me some pop culture
totally
that's just like getting you through the day?
Yeah. So not surprisingly, giving me my tastes, I am returning to my favorite World War II favorites, people who encountered enormously hard times, but not only came out of it, but in many ways thrived in the middle of that, and acts of heroism and community and fellow feeling that, and, you know, amid lots of things that were absolutely terrifying. My favorite focus of these is things that went on in London during the Blitz, and then the D-Day invasions, and thereafter. The one I'm reading right now, which I've read before, is Life After Life by Kate Atkinson.
I was just going to ask if you had gone back to Life After Life, which is a book that I would never agreed to read again. So that's fascinating to me.
Yep. Yeah, no, I had not reread it since the first time. I'm a big rereader, but I hadn't reread it since then. And it's been, well, first of all, it's far less confusing.
Well,
this time.
Yes.
Second of all, like there's a lot of like wonderful thematic elements that are relevant that I hadn't really caught on to, of like how much her life is about learning the lessons of the past lives that she'd gone on, not only to her own benefit, but to the benefit of the world. And then the rationale for why she had to go through different sections of her life again and again. This is a book about a woman who kind of repeats her life in various forms. It's not just random, but it has very much to do with experiences she needed to have in order to understand the human condition. And that's been great. I'm sure I'll probably go back and dig into some Herman Wouk at some point in time. But if folks have really inspiring and lovely World War II fiction, please send it my way, because I would be sure to enjoy. I have not started Tiger King yet because I feel like I don't need to at this point. Where are you at? Where are you at on pop culture these days?
I definitely watched Tiger King. I definitely do not think that Carol murdered her first husband. I think that he was laundering money for the cartels, and obviously they got to him. So, like, all of my cousins who are on board the, you know, the Carol killed her husband train, I think are wrong. But I enjoy the memes. So, you know, that's fine. I've been on kind of a Tom Hardy kick, because why not? So
why not?
You know, I watched Legend. I watched, he's in this series Taboo that you would probably like, sort of set like 1812-ish in England. And he's kind of a mysterious character who's been off doing something unclear. And it's kind of a little bit of, you know, magic, myth, and mystery, you know, underneath things, but he's going to get even and blah, blah, blah. So, I mean, that's kind of fun. I've been watching like an odd mix of kind of bad Netflix pop culture. There's the new Heidi Klum, Tim Gunn fashion show called Making the Cut, which is just totally nice. Enjoyable. And then yesterday, I basically binged an entire season of Schitt's Creek, which was a show that I tried to get into last year and just couldn't. I do not like cringy humor. I cannot stand Curb Your Enthusiasm. I do not like The Office. And this is kind of like right on the edge. But people who I adore said they love this show. And so I was like, okay, I'll go back to it. So I skipped a season two and basically just consumed it wholesale. And it now it's kind of working for me. So I don't know how to describe it. It's a very rich family basically strands themselves in a town they bought once upon a time after they leave all the rest of their money. And they're hysterical, not entirely functional humans. And if that annoys you, then you will find them annoying. But it's, you know, Catherine O'Hara and Eugene Levy and Eugene Levy's son are just delightful. So, and the costumes are fantastic. They're kind of they're legitimately hilarious.
So I've been thinking about going back to Battlestar Galactica, like which I've watched before and loved the first time around. I have been worried that it would be too much because it was much the first time around in a post 9/11 world.
Yes. I would be interested. We should do this together potentially, because when I first watched it, I thought it was one of the best reflections on civil military relations I'd ever seen in pop culture. And I wonder how I would feel about that assessment given the last 15 years of my life since I last watched it.
Well, not even that. So I think you're absolutely right to have that reflection now, but then also the isolation that comes from that show, that I think at the time would just sort of been like, oh yeah, the rest of civilization died and they're kind of stuck on ships. Meh. But like now, like, oh, they're like stuck on ships with, and can't get access to one another on a regular basis and can only like kind of video teleconference and have to go fight the Cylons and worry about things coming at them every 33 minutes. So anyway, it's a great show. If you haven't seen it before, highly recommended. Probably don't bother with the last season unless you just really care.
I mean, I bet Apollo's still hot. Like that's kind of,
oh, for sure. You know. No question that Apollo is still hot.
Putting that out there. So yeah, I'm trying to think if there's the only other pop culture I would say that I've done is that I've really gone back to a lot of music because I'm working from home and can actually use Spotify, which I can't usually do at my office. And so pulling through a lot of my own playlists, but it's also a lot of kind of general Spotify, you know, indie and alt rock and other playlists. It's been great to just sort of have that on in the background as a, you know, soothing, you know, not that it's all like downbeat, but just, you know, that kind of noise and to take a little bit of solace in the music has been enjoyable as well. So that's,
I've had to have music on to deal with my, as I've mentioned before, my extreme misophonia that of like hearing noises that stress me out. I have not arrived yet, but it will be here soon, gotten a weighted blanket. And I'm hopeful that like I will be able to function as a human and listen to people like breathe without wanting to break the walls down, but we'll see.
No, their chewing is still really going to irritate you. I hate to tell you that, but it's true.
If they just like subsist on air, it would just be so much better.
Well, I think that is most of what we have for this somewhat abbreviated episode of Bombshell. So thank you, Lauren, for coming up with some fabulous questions to guide a somewhat difficult discussion here. And hopefully Rod will be back with us in a couple of weeks and we'll see how things are faring then. Until then, we will meet you then.
We'll meet again.